This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Star Wars took the world by storm. It redefined the box office blockbuster and sparked a global phenomenon that spoke to the triumphs and trials of its age. Love it or hate it, the saga changed our idea of cinema as we traveled through the galaxy with space heroes and villains. It reflected who we were and hoped to be back at us. The latest film, Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, brings us to the end of the core saga, for now, anyway, and it's been a heck of a ride. Why has Star Wars stuck with us for so long, when other pop culture phenoms fizzled out? And what's next for the franchise? Joining us from KUT in Austin is Kate Sanchez, the editor-in-chief of But Why Though, a geek community, and creator and co-host of the But Why Though podcast. Kate, welcome to 1A.
Thank you so much for having me.
Joining us from NPR in New York is Claudia Amenabar, senior social media producer for Inside Edition. Claudia, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And at NPR West near Los Angeles is Nicholas Kull. He's a professor of public diplomacy at USC's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. He's also the author of Projecting Tomorrow, Science Fiction in Popular Cinema. Professor Kull, glad to have you with us.
Hi, Joshua.
We're also glad to get your questions and thoughts about the Star Wars saga. None of us is an expert on all things Star Wars. Let's just clear that right up before we dive in. So if you have a question about the 13th novel in the saga that dealt with Chewbacca's grandfather on his mother's side, we can't help you. But we would love to know your thoughts on the saga overall, what it has meant to you, your reactions to the end of the saga, and just kind of the way that the fandom is playing out where you are. Maybe you're part of a group of people who's psyched up about going to see Episode 9. Talk about that with us. Or maybe you're glad that it's over. Regardless of how you feel, email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. So I'm curious to know how y'all feel about the end of the Skywalker saga. And to be clear, we're talking about the end of the core storyline, the 9 episodes. There are other spin-off stories as well. But Kate Sanchez, let me start with you. How do you feel about the end of this era?
I don't know how to answer that question, if I'm being completely honest. I've been going from excitement, anticipation, to a little bit of worry. It's like a whole bunch of feelings bouncing around inside me, but I'm seeing it at 6 o'clock today. So all I know going into it is that I feel like it is another chapter in my life. Because when I was a kid, I actually had the original trilogy because my cousins were in love with it. And then the prequels came out and I got to see it in theaters. And then now I have the sequel trilogy, and it's different points in my life. So I very much feel like it's closing a little bit of me with it. But we have Disney Plus, so I'm going to get more.
Professor Cole, what about you?
Well, I'm old enough to have been a child when the first movie came out. So for me, it's exciting to be able to share a Star Wars release with my own kids. I think that there's something inherently nostalgic about Star Wars. But right now, we're getting a lot out of watching The Mandalorian. So yeah. I don't feel we're particularly bereft right now.
Before I get to you, Claudia, Professor Cole, you mentioned that you're sharing it with your kids now.
Yes.
Have you had to kind of ever explain to your kids why Star Wars was a thing? I remember with one of my cousins who's a generation younger than me having to explain to her what Star Trek was. Like, how do you explain to someone who's never heard of Star Trek what Star Trek is about, and I had to figure out how to do it and why it was a thing? What kind of conversation did you have with your kids about Star Wars? Did they get it, or did you have to explain it?
No, they always got it. The more of a problem is trying to explain it to students who've come from places where Star Wars isn't a big thing, and specifically China. And I think one of the problems for Disney is that they have this massive franchise that means absolutely nothing to one of their key target markets. Yeah. So it's more of an issue explaining it to Chinese students than to my own kids.
Yeah, we might get into that global reach a little bit more in a second. But Claudia Amenabar, what about you? How do you feel about the saga ending?
Oh, whenever a new movie comes out, I have this mix of excitement, you know, especially because a lot of times they come out near Christmas, and so it's like a special Christmas gift for me. And also anxiety because, you know, media means a lot to me, and I work in media, and, you know, I'm always worried about, like, what the biggest cultural product means. So there's half of it is anxiety, and half of it is being like, this is something I love so much, and I finally get to enjoy it. I think the first watch of a Star Wars movie is always a great moment. And to echo a lot of what Kate said, a lot of different Star Wars moments have come at important moments of my life. And so it's a weird feeling. And it's also, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's the end. And it's like, well, they said that before. I can't really say that it's the end. We also have The Mandalorian. We have the Clone Wars in February. So it's not, it doesn't feel like the end to me. And it's never really going to be the end. So it's a mixed bag.
Kate, what are some of the things we've heard so far about Episode 9? The reviews, as I understand it thus far, and we're going to avoid spoilers. There have been some spoilers that have been published about what's in Episode 9. Because the movie is not out publicly all over the place yet, we're going to stay away from the spoilers. But the reviews, Kate, have been, I think, mixed at best.
Yeah, I edited the review for my site right before it came here.
Oh.
Our reviewer, at least speaking for that piece, because I've actually put myself in a bubble these last 2 days, just really trying to dodge spoilers. But from what I have seen, a lot of it is the largest critique of the film is that apparently it pushes to please every audience instead of just going with it. The one word that keeps coming up is fan service, which is a word that I have a little bit of a contention with because, I mean, I'm a fan, so there are a lot of moments where I'm like, yes, do these things for me. But without seeing it, that is a lot of the critique I've seen, as well as critiques of whether or not it is respectful of Rian Johnson's last film, The Last Jedi. But that's kind of what's been floating in the ether.
I'm sorry,
so
Kate, would you clarify what you mean by respectful of Rise of the Jedi?
Yeah.
Of The Last Jedi, right?
The Last Jedi, yeah. So the thing is The Last Jedi caused a lot of division in the fandom, and this comes from so many different things. I personally did not like that film. Please don't at me. It's caused a lot of talk. And so there's before Rise of the Skywalker came out at Celebration, when everything, when we got our first trailers, when we got a look into things, people automatically started saying, it's going to undo The Last Jedi. It's going to undo The Last Jedi. And there was no way that was going to happen because J.J. has to make this cohesive trilogy, right?
J.J. Abrams, the director who's overseeing the trilogy.
Yes, and he had worked with Rian before on The Last Jedi, at least a little bit. And a lot of critics that I've seen in my critic circle have been saying that he didn't undo it, but he wasn't respectful to what was done. I don't know exactly what that means, not having seen the film, but there has been a press cycle because, you know, Star Wars is a press machine, where a couple of the actors have, you know, just said little things that they maybe did not like what their character did in The Last Jedi or anything like that. And of course, fandom is fandom, and fandom was angry, fandom was happy, and it's kind of created this really contentious milieu that is just there. So I'm trying to reserve a lot of my own personal feelings and trying to filter out a lot of others because people are passionate about Star Wars.
Well, Claudia, I was just going to ask you about your reaction to what you've heard so far, including the different criticisms. One of our listeners, Christopher, wrote on our Facebook page, on balance, I've enjoyed the new trilogy as a late 30s fan. I'd like you to discuss the difference between critical evaluations and fan evaluations of these movies. Claudia?
Oh, that is a meaty question.
Yeah.
You know, it's an interesting question because there are a lot of people who have come from the fandom space, which actually is an inherently critical and transformative space, and become critics. And then there are people who are critics who are very traditional about it. So it has become a very interesting question. And it also, you know, and there are a lot of people in fandom spaces who are doing criticism and don't even realize it as well. And then there are people who are, you know, like Kate, like, you know, putting themselves out there and you know, doing the work every single day. So it's a very weird question. And especially with Star Wars, you know, there's often a false dichotomy of like, this is what the fans think and this is what the critics think. And they are at each other's head. And that's often because the most negative voices are the loudest voices. I mean, they're not the majority. You know, the people who are going to complain the most are the people who have, you know, a negative thing to say. And so, especially with The Last Jedi, we had a lot of people who, you know, with the kind of bad faith critiques. But then there were also good faith critiques. I know, Kate, you talk about those all the time that I like to bring up as well. I'm very neutral in The Last Jedi. There were parts that I liked, parts that I didn't like. I don't really have a love or hate for it. But it's hard because when people say the fandom, I never really know what part of the fandom they're talking about. Like, yeah, the fandom that I sit in is very different from, you know, your dudes on Reddit, you know, the people who are in your comment section, that kind of thing. So it's a very weird question. And there's also the fandom of just like your normal everyday person who loves Star Wars, grew up with it, you know, goes to see the movie, enjoys it as well. Like, that's also very valid. So again, a very complicated question. And to that I say, fandom takes many forms, and so does criticism. And I think the positive part of this, what was the word that Kate used? A storm that has come after all these movies is that it has made us ask these questions.
Well, and also, I hear you, Claudia, and also we kind of bring our own views to fandom. I mean, you know, I can't tell you how many people complained that the new main hero of the new trilogy was a woman instead of a man, or that there were all these multicultural characters. And Professor, I want to get into that, kind of what we project onto Star Wars in a minute when we continue with Claudia Amenabar, Kate Sanchez, and Professor Nick Kull. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you are listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson from a galaxy far, far away to our studios right here in the Beltway. We're discussing Star Wars and its legacy with Kate Sanchez, editor-in-chief of But Why Though, Claudia Amenabar, senior social media producer of Inside Edition, and Professor Nicholas Kull of USC Edinburgh. We would love to hear from you, your thoughts about the end of this part of the saga. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@wamu.org. Maybe you also have some thoughts about the expansion of this universe, whether it's The Mandalorian, the new series on Disney's new streaming service, Disney Plus. Maybe you've ridden some of the new Star Wars rides, especially Rise of the Resistance, the new one, or Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. I am that nerd. I know the names of both those rides off the top of my head. So if you are as geeked out about Star Wars as I am, or maybe if some of it has disappointed you in the last few years, feel free to comment, 1A@wamu.org. A lot of you have family stories to share about Star Wars. Tressa tweeted, "I watched Star Wars for the first time with my dad when I was a kid, and when episode 3 ended, he asked me why I cried. I couldn't come up with a reason then, but I think it was because of the internal impact it had on me. I'm so glad I had the chance to see new ones now." Mark writes, "My favorite childhood memory was when my uncle took me and my siblings and all our cousins to see Star Wars: A New Hope." That's episode 4, the first movie. "He waited all morning in line to get tickets. I will never forget that experience. I can't wait to take my own family to the final movie." Professor Kull, you talked about sharing Star Wars with your kids. Take us back to the late 70s. Why did Star Wars strike such a chord when it came out? And for that matter, did it strike that chord right away? Was it an instant hit, or did it kind of grow on us?
Oh, it was an instant hit. And often that's attributed to the really clever marketing that went on in support of Star Wars, that there was a manufactured buzz, or they encouraged a buzz long before it came out. But to me, when I look at Star Wars, what I think George Lucas did was he found a way of of returning to movie genres that had become impossible to use in the political era of the 1970s. For example, it's hard to make a Western when, as a society, you're worrying about, you know, the genocide of American Indians, and it's hard to make a movie celebrating war when you're just coming out of the Vietnam War. It's hard to make a religious epic, when the society is questioning its values in the way that society was in the 70s. So what I think he was able to do with Star Wars was to take these familiar genres, place them in an abstract space, literally space, long ago in a galaxy far, far away. And then it was possible for America to have all of its reassuring images, including images of otherness, to have fun with other races, and to tell a really exciting story that would have been impossible to tell in the context of the 70s. By the 80s, it was possible to tell those stories again, but it wouldn't really work in the 70s. And nobody was going to review Star Wars and say, hey, wait a minute, some of my best friends are Wookiees, or, oh, my parents worked for the Empire, you can't say that about them. But, you know, in the Hollywood of the 70s, those things were restraining the kind of stories you could tell.
Professor, I just want you to know that by the end of this show, there will be someone online who is selling bumper stickers that say some of my best friends are Wookiees. I just want you to know that. Look what you've
but,
done.
You know, the other thing, Joshua, is that I think that when Star Wars came out, it was about nostalgia for movies, for literary science fiction, and thinking of the myths that lie underneath. But today, it's nostalgia for Star Wars. So we don't need to have nostalgia for the source movies. We can have nostalgia for... It's wonderful to revisit the excitement of seeing a Star Wars movie.
Well, and Professor, on top of that, it also kind of pulled movies forward technologically, because George Lucas had to kind of invent the technology he wanted for Star Wars by founding companies like Industrial Light and Magic and Skywalker Sound. I mean, I'm just looking on their website at some of the movies that they have contributed special effects to. Of course,
sure.
A lot of the, you know, superhero movies, but Us
sure.
used effects from Industrial Light and Magic. Black
sure.
Panther used effects from Industrial Light and Magic. Only
absolutely.
The Brave,
it's the industry
Kong Skull
standard.
Island. Yeah, Deepwater Horizon.
But look,
like, it's just changed movies in that way.
Here's the thing that... the original Star Wars used a lot of things to do with World War II, including, you know, the stormtroopers, the Imperials were wearing Nazi-style uniforms, little uniform details that mark them as World War II. The aircraft, the way that the fighters work, borrowed directly from World War II movies. But by the time we get to the late 90s, it's changed the way that World War II movies look. So in Star Wars, the fighters move like World War II planes, but by the late 90s, by Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor, the World War II planes are moving like aircraft in Star Wars. So in a weird way, Star Wars didn't only change the way that space movies look, it changed the way that our own history is represented, and we see our own history through the lens of Star Wars. So it's now reversing its influence, where we're changing things that are rooted in reality, not in fiction. So that's a very strange impact.
Kate, what about today? How do you see the franchise reflecting our world, our worldviews, our society today, in so much as perhaps it does?
Gosh, that's a huge question, which I guess that's really going to be the theme for this episode. Star Wars is a huge question in and of itself. And for me, and I can only speak from a very personal place, because although I'm a film critic, although I'm a TV critic, there's something so personal about Star Wars that I've actively tried to not review Star Wars media because of the connection I have to it. But a lot of that connection for me in this current phase of Star Wars comes from the different types of stories that it's telling. I think that there has been a move away from just seeing Star Wars as that thing we saw as kids, and it's still inherently a kid's film. It's tackling larger issues. If you look at a film like Rogue One, it's expanding the Star Wars universe to to see the death that is happening, to see the cost of rebellion, to see the importance of understanding, to understand the importance of looking up. You know, Rogue One is really my favorite of all of the Disney era Star Wars films. But more importantly, it's one of my favorite Star Wars films overall, because you have this one, we get our first major Latino lead in Diego Luna as Cassian Andor. And he has this exchange with Jyn Erso where she's explained that, it, you know, there's no problem if you don't look up. If you don't look up and you don't see the Imperials. And she has this course through the movie where she does begin to look up, but then she starts to assert herself over Cassian. And Cassian has this exchange with her where he says, "I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old." It's just, and this isn't exact word for words, but he points out that it's just now relevant for you, because you're just now looking at this. And I think that film asks us very deeply. And for me, as a Latina, as a Chicana, as somebody who has literally been fighting for things that I'm just now seeing people realize, there has to be, I'm happy that people are fighting. And I think that this is what we see in Star Wars, but there has to be an understanding of the history of the people who have been in the fight so long.
Before I come to you, Claudia, Kate, let me just tag onto that. I feel like in the last few years, and I don't know if you see this way as well, but I feel like in the last few years, in particular, the age of social media, the way that fandom exists, because we're culturally aware in a different way, because we talk about diversity and inclusion in a different way, as we said, there are multiple fan bases. It's almost like there are multiple fan discussions after a movie like this, where you might view it as just a story about principles or a story that reflects you back to yourself, like the diversity or the homogeneity or realizing that there's a cause going on around you where, you know, a black audience will watch Black Panther very differently than a white audience might watch Black Panther, for example.
Yeah, I mean, and that's honestly, I am very thankful to be in an era of Star Wars where the first two live action shows are with two leads named Diego and Pedro. Like, that's phenomenal to me. And one of the most beautiful things about this new diversity is I have in my entire life, I haven't really spoken with many other Latino fans. And that's not saying that, like, they're not there. It's just saying that, like, in the online discourse, it's hard to find people who are like you. But then when The Mandalorian hit, it was like, let the next Twitter rose up, and we claimed Baby Yoda as ours, and he's Yodito. And The Mandalorian is really just a long novella that is El Mando y Yodito, and that's it. And I've been able to connect with people in a different way. Like, we're making memes of Baby Yoda holding conchas, and, like, it's this beautiful thing that, like, I did not know, because, like, we've always had memes of Star Wars in cultural references, but to see it being used with my heritage, to see it being used within, you know, the many communities that fall under the umbrella of Latinx, it's a beautiful thing.
And it's also worth noting that the actor who plays the Mandalorian, Pedro Pascal, is a Chilean-born American actor. So there's that link as well. But Claudia, I also want to get your thought about these kind of larger overarching themes. We heard from one fan who talked about the message that she takes from Star Wars. Here's what Kaylee in Colorado left in our inbox.
Star Wars, the old Star Wars, was around when I was born, and I've gotten as an adult to travel with the new Star Wars. It's a story about good and evil and about personal evolution and so much more than the action story or action films that it has a reputation for.
Kaylee, thanks very much for sharing your thoughts with us. John emailed, "I am a Jedi. In all seriousness, I can't control the world around me, but I do believe there is a life force which flows through all of us. I believe we would be better served if we all acted in this way." I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. Now, Claudia, I know that people take a lot metaphysically from Star Wars, especially Yoda. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people say, "Try not, do or do not, there is no try." Or that quote, you know, "Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering." All true, all valid. Then again, it's a movie. It's just a movie. This is not the Book of Ecclesiastes. It's a movie.
Yeah,
what about this kind of the spiritualization of Star Wars? How do you see that?
That's an interesting question, especially for me. And also to say to Kate, Rogue One is also my favorite movie, and that is also my favorite Star Wars scene. So I was just nodding my head here. And also, I'm Chilean American, so the Mandalorian is Chilean. We claim him. This is something I always try to talk about, especially, you know, in a more secular society or whatever. Star Wars is the closest we have to a modern mythology, whether you like it or believe in it or whatever that we have. You know, we argue about it like religion. We talk about it like religion. And there's a larger conversation that can be had about, you know, do we relate to capitalism and consumer products in the way that people in the past have related to, you know, religious texts and that kind of thing. And I feel like this is the closest we have to a religious text. It's something that, you know, we talk about when it disappoints us, and we talk about when it fails us, and we talk about when it sustains us. Especially, I mean, for me personally, and again, same as Kate, you know, it's a very personal thing for me. You know, it is there for you when other things are not, and much like religion is. And I think that's why people see it the same way. And to be fair, the experience of fandom is that people do that with a lot of things. It just happens that with Star Wars, there are certain elements that a lot of people do it in the same way. You know, I could list a countless number of things, even that I like, that you know, that I treat as, you know, a philosophical way that I think about life. And, you know, people think about religion in a way that, as a belief system. And I think, you know, a movie or a piece of media, you know, can also shape how you think about life, especially if it came to you as a child. And Star Wars came to a lot of people as a child, depending on what generation, but it came to a lot of different generations. And so it's kind of unique in that way.
Well, Professor, I want to play a quick clip from John Boyega, who plays Finn in the final trilogy, the last of the three trilogies that will wrap up with The Rise of Skywalker. Variety interviewed John Boyega and asked him why he thinks someone might choose the First Order. For those of you who haven't seen the new movies, Finn is a stormtrooper who defects in the very beginning of Episode 7 and then encounters Rey and becomes part of the hero's journey when he was formerly a stormtrooper, basically from birth. So here is John Boyega talking about why someone might choose the new bad guys, the First Order.
It's really interesting. So perhaps people signing on to the First Order is because the First Order has occupied a lot of planets in the universe, and people are just growing up in those societies and believe, you know, that's the society you grow up in, that's the government you grow up in, that's the army they give you to protect you. So you're like, it is what it is.
That's John Boyega, who plays Finn in the new Star Wars films. Professor Cole, one of the challenges we always run into when we talk about pop culture are fans who say, can't this just be a movie? Can't this just be a fun story about good and evil? I don't think George Lucas meant this to be a social message valediction. I think he just meant this to be entertainment. How do you see it over the arc of this series? Was it meant to have a message, or was it just meant to be fun?
Well, that's a good question. I think that The thing about Star Wars is that, you know, George Lucas had a number of motives clearly when he set out to tell the story. He wanted it to be a fantastic story. He wanted it to make money. He wanted it to be entertaining. But by setting it in this abstract, removed setting and making it in a way about nothing, he made it possible for the movie to be the movie cycle to be about everything. And to really be about relationships and identity. And I think that that's what we take away from Star Wars, is that it encourages us to look at ourselves and look at our relationship with our parents. And one of the things that I found really fascinating about the opportunity to see it over these three cycles of movies is that it shows, or it tracks, a response to previous generations. So, you know, the first movie was created by baby boomers and was sort of angry with the greatest generation. By the prequels, when they came out, they developed a sympathy for the greatest generation. And their hero was now the villain from the previous movies, as if it was about understanding how the pressures on that generation. And then the third cycle has had to deal with the failure of the dream of the baby boomers. So I'm really interested to see where the final movie in this of the nine leaves us, and whether there's some hope there that we can get our act together collectively.
We'll talk about where the series leaves us in just a moment, including what Kyle tweeted. Kyle writes, "The series has been taken in a direction lacking in creativity and works far too hard to please the masses instead of defining itself. Hashtag Disney just wants your money." Stay close. Back now to our conversation with Claudia Amenabar, Kate Sanchez, and Professor Nick Kull. Still a bit more time to get in some of your questions and thoughts and stories. 1a@wamu.org. Simple Mentation tweeted, "I still remember me and my brother getting dropped off at the matinee to see Star Wars. We hid in the theater and stayed for three showings." Michael writes, "It's crazy to think about how big Star Wars was and is. I can't think of another movie that inspired so many sequels, TV spin-offs, Christmas specials, or NPR radio dramas. It's weird for me to think that I can remember having my hands nailed by collapsible lightsabers as a kid and now get to yell at my girls for doing the same thing in our house." And it is true, by the way, NPR did a radio drama of Star Wars. Google it. It really happened. Google it. But Kate, what about that? The kind of consumerism that's built up around Star Wars. Kyle, as I read a second ago, tweeted, "The series has been taken in a direction lacking in creativity and works far too hard to please the masses instead of defining itself. Hashtag Disney just wants your money." Kate?
Gosh. Again, a big question. But it's hard for me to answer because Disney as a company has gobbled up so much media that almost any film that you're seeing a Disney film. The practices in theaters, when they buy out theaters and pretty much you only get to see a Marvel film or a Disney film or a Star Wars film for the next 3 weeks because they've bought all the screens and maybe there's one showing of something else. It's hard.
Or a Pixar film, yeah.
Hell, they're going to start doing it with Fox, too.
Right, because they now own 21st Century Fox.
Exactly. And it's hard for me. Because I'm a fan who is so in love and passionate about this media. So I'm excited when The Mandalorian gets announced. I'm excited when there's a new Poe Dameron shirt that I can buy. I'm excited about it. But then when I step back and I think about it critically, I come from a background doing a PhD studying pop culture and everything like that. So I automatically try to think about things critically. But there's like the small disconnect with me in Star Wars. But when I do, I sit back and I wouldn't agree that it's not as creative now. I think we're getting a different kind of creativity. We're seeing, because of the buying power behind Star Wars, they can take more risks in making a true Western samurai, infused TV show in The Mandalorian that's only like 30 to 40 minutes long, that we wouldn't get if we didn't have that. But at the same time, it is stifling creativity from other outlets because I do think that instead of Disney stifling creativity and making its own name, I think that there's such an imposing force in the genre that now we're getting more things that are either not being done because Star Wars can do 10 things, or we're getting things being made that are so trying to be the Star Wars ideal that we're missing out on what these new stories could be, or we're just missing great original content that's being put into an IP, because instead of having a general space Western that it has nothing to do with Star Wars, we're going to take that script and we're going to make it Star Wars because we can make more money that way.
But Kate, does that create for an additional risk when you take an IP, an intellectual property, and play around with it in all those different ways? I mean, you've now got these lands at the parks in Disneyland and Disney World in California and Florida, respectively, called Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, where you can walk in, you encounter stormtroopers, you can build a lightsaber, you can shake hands with Darth Vader and hope he doesn't choke you telekinetically. You can ride two new simulator rides, Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run and Rise of the Resistance, which the reviews are astronomically positive for. People have said Rise of the Resistance is the best ride Disney has ever made. But then you begin to kind of have all these different tendrils and many people experience in many different ways. I mean, I've watched The Mandalorian on my phone. I've watched one episode on a television. And it feels like that can be a risk, where you have this one experience where everyone experienced the same way in 1977. And now many experiences, people experience many different ways, where you might see it at a multiplex or a PlayStation or a theme park.
I think with the way that today, the way we consume media and the way that we're connected to each other so much, it's not a risk. Because there's a value add. The value add is now, I actually watched two episodes of The Mandalorian on a flight because that's what I wanted. I chose The Mandalorian because I could have Disney Plus and I could download the content and I could watch it on the flight. But
oh my
I didn't
God, that's
watch.
The same thing I did.
Yes,
and
the thing is, as it's not a risk, because as you expand and you go to these different areas, you are now putting your foot in that area, and they're not going to choose that other product. Now I'm not going to choose, at the very least, there's going to be 40 minutes of my day every Friday, this week it was Wednesday, that I'm not going to be on Netflix or Hulu because I am going to be watching Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. So for them, it's not a risk. And I think that this is one of the things that we kind of lose sight of, is that Disney owns so much and is so big that there is no risk to be had anymore, I believe, because even when a film does bad, even when it divides a fandom, even when people don't think about it necessarily positively and there's negative stuff going on, people are still consuming the product.
Yeah.
People are still watching the film multiple times. Like I paid to watch The Last Jedi twice because I needed to convince myself, okay, did I really not like it? Or is there something I can do? Maybe if I see it again, I can like it. But I spent more money into it. So you have an IP that exists in this constant state of consumption that even if you fail, you hit.
We did hear from some fans about the movies they really did like, including a lot of people who said they loved Rogue One. Rachel tweeted, "Rogue One might be my favorite Star Wars movie, mostly because it allows the Star Wars franchise to take risks that they otherwise might not in the main trilogies. Sometimes emotional potency comes better from a succinct and self-contained story." Mm-hmm. With regard to the spiritual aspect that we talked about, Karen emailed, "I propose that scriptures of various faiths are those texts or stories that express a culture's beliefs, norms, struggles, and hopes when those texts are accepted and promulgated by some dominant group. In this view, the quoting of Yoda can be a scripture for the Star Wars generations." Mm-hmm. Chad emailed, "I grew up watching the original trilogy and watched the prequels in theater. It has led me to start writing fantasy stories. And I even named my son after my favorite expanded universe character, Revan." Professor Call, this is, I think, another one of the big impacts of Star Wars, this fandom. I don't know if it started with Star Wars, but you've had a lot of people who have taken the stories and run with them and kind of owned them and made costumes and made fan fiction and really made it their own.
Sure. And, you know, I think you can see the same with Star Trek, same with Doctor Who, that, you know, it's one of the wonderful things about that, you know, in some ways Disney owns the franchise, but in other ways the people own the franchise. And the wonderful thing about Star Wars is that we can internalize it, that we can take the parts of it that are relevant to us and where we are in our lives at a particular moment. And I think that comes out from both what Kate and Claudia are saying. And and that's something to be celebrated, that nobody can restrict the way that as a child you respond to a text like this. And we all have our own memories of making lightsaber noises and waggling sticks around, and that's admit it, you did that, Joshua.
I have been known to go
yes, and that's just part of what it is to be.
That may be the first time anyone has done that on NPR. I'm very proud.
Late 20th century, early 21st century, early 21st century human being. But when I look at I think you can use Star Wars the way that an archaeologist would use a slice of through of landscape that you've dug down through, and you can think, well, what's changed? If this was the only thing we had to tell us about Western civilization, what would it tell us? And you can see, I think, within Star Wars, this narrative of much greater female empowerment, where female characters are now front and center in the franchise. You can see how people of color have moved to the fore, and this is something to be celebrated. I think it shows we're moving in the right direction. Go back to the first show, and diversity is so buried within those shows. The only woman who really gets to speak is Princess Leia, and sure, she's speaking in an energetic way, and is not just a damsel in distress, but the rest of the movie, the diversity is buried. That you see the droids. Maybe they're a kind of stand-in for excluded people, for working class or African American.
Well, she starts as a damsel in distress,
Yeah, but she takes over her own rescue, right?
Right.
Get this walking carpet out of my way.
Aaron emailed, "It's hard to put into words just how important these stories are to me and how emotional it is to know that this 9-story arc is coming to a close. I'm one who loved The Last Jedi, and I'm not ashamed that I am heading into this last movie hoping for a Ben Solo redemption and romance with Rey." I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. So what are y'all hoping for from episode 9? What would you like to... Is there one thing in particular that you're counting on this movie to do, to be, to present, to embody, to resolve? Claudia, what about you?
And
if not, that's fine. I'm just curious if there is.
The child part of my brain is saying, I want this, X, Y, and Z. But not just Star Wars, but many fandoms have lowered me in my grave so you can let me down one last time. So that happens to me a lot. So I have learned the lesson. Many can say this about Game of Thrones or another show that I loved, Voltron, that kind of thing. And Star Wars has also taught me this lesson. I take from it what I can. And I take the pieces that I can enjoy, and the rest of it I have to just live with. And so whenever I go into a new movie, I go, I hope there is that one moment that is magical for me. Like, specifically The Last Jedi, it wasn't one of my favorite movies, but there is a moment. And Yoda is also a character I do not like for many reasons. But that's a hot take that I won't get into. he's an interesting character. I don't like him personally.
Does he owe you money? But... What did Yoda like?
No.
We will set that aside.
He's a war criminal, but there's a lot there.
Yeah, we're going to set that aside because this show, we don't have another 2 hours to get into that.
It's funny because... my favorite moment of The Last Jedi is a line that is a conversation that he and Luke Skywalker have, and there's this line where he says, we are what they grow beyond. And that whole scene, it makes me sob every time, even though I'm like, I hate Yoda, I hate this. this might be because of John Williams, who does the most work in all of these movies. He truly, he deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah.
And the music plays and that kind of thing. But in every one of these movies, there is that magical moment that I can take and I can go, the world is hard and life is hard, and I can watch this movie and experience magic that I can't anywhere else for one moment, and that's all I can really hope for.
Let me give Kate and Professor Cole a chance to chime in, but I do hear you in terms of, sagas letting you down. The only one I think that has not let me down so far is Harry Potter. After I saw The Play Cursed Child, it locked the story together for me very neatly and was a highly, highly satisfying Broadway experience. But before we go, Kate, Professor Cole, what are you looking for from this last movie?
For me, honestly, I want to see the trio that we started with get a wrap on their arc, or at the very least leave some of it open for a Disney Plus show, because I will watch Finn and Poe in their own show. Disney, if you're listening, please do that. But more importantly, I felt, and a lot of my issues with the last film, and I feel really bad that I've only brought those up because there are beautiful things about that film as well, is that Finn, who started The Force Awakens as the potential of being this great fighter, this great big character, ends up being pushed to a joke. He's a punchline in so many of the comedic elements of the film, and it bothers me so much. And maybe this is because I'm a woman of color watching the film, but it bothers me that that happens to him. It also bothers me that Oscar Isaac, who is Latino, essentially has this, not, he's not a joke, but he's an antagonist. After we've been set up with so much of his force sensitivity, his leadership in the comics and other things,
right.
That from what I want from Rise is I just want my boys to rise up. I want Finn and Poe to get their due, or at the very least leave me get enough to show me that I can see more.
And briefly, Professor Cole, you were there at the beginning. Now that the end is coming, what do you want to see briefly before we go?
Well, I think I'll be sitting there, to be honest, saying, dear God, please don't let this suck. Please don't let this suck. But
that's so relatable.
The other thing is that one of the nice things for me has been I have family through my sister that live in the west of Ireland, and it's been great to see Irish locations used, the Skerries, the islands that are in the in the previous movie. So I hope there's lots of Irish locations so that people go on holiday to the west of Ireland and spend some money and help those wonderful communities out there, because they've loved being Star Wars locations. Goleen in West Cork,
they've
painted a place for you to park your X-Wing in their big car park. That's what I hope will come.
USC Professor Nick
Irish
Cole,
locations.
Claudia Menabar of Inside Edition, and Kate Sanchez of But Why Though? Thank you all for being with us. This program was produced by Morgan Givens. You can learn more about our team at the1a.org. I'm Joshua Johnson. I'll see you tomorrow for my very last Friday News Roundup. This is 1A.